Hi, this is Space Kate, and I'm at the Space Generation Congress in Toronto, and I have managed to grab Jason Cruten, who has the most amazing NASA-style job title, which I'm going to let him introduce.
Hey, this is Jason Cruten, and I'm from NASA headquarters, and I am the Director for Advanced Exploration Systems within the Human Explorations Mission Directorate.
See, I told you that was a bit of a mouthful. Now, you gave us a fantastic presentation this morning with all sorts of exciting things that you're working on. One thing I was particularly interested in was the new range of spacesuits. Can you tell me a little bit about those?
Yeah, so we've been working on advancing a next-generation suit for exploration, and we want a suit that we can use in space for our transits to places like to Mars and such, but also when we get to the surface. The suit is really unique in that whenever we get to a surface, obviously we want to be out and working in the environment as much as possible. So we've been designing a suit to allow us to use for many, many EVAs, extra vehicular activities. So you can go out as often as you'd like and as frequently as you'd like. And we've been advancing that through a new portable life support system, which is the backpack that you see them wearing, along with the garment that you wear as well, the pressure suit that goes along with it.
So one of the things that's traditionally a bit of a problem with the spacesuits is they're quite big, unwieldy, not particularly flexible. Have you managed to find ways around that?
Yeah, so we have been working on weight reductions and basically putting the backpack on a diet, and we've significantly reduced the weight of the backpack. We've also been looking at new next-generation joint technologies to reduce the joints themselves. And then the materials overall, looking at composites for like the upper torso area and using the composites to help reduce weight, and also it'd be able to increase the flexibility of sizing for crew members that are different sizes and such. All those add up to significant weight savings. But luckily, all the places we're going have reduced gravity as well. So the weight of it isn't as important, it is somewhat important when you fall down and those kind of things, and you want to be able to manage that overall mass that you have when you're taking it halfway across the solar system as well.
So wearable technology is all the rage down here on Earth at the moment. The Apple iWatch was just launched. Have you got any kind of exciting technology that's kind of integral to the suit?
Yeah, so underneath the suit, what you don't see is we need to be able to regulate our temperature. We've been looking at there's coolant loops and our current spacesuits, they basically run cold water through a suit that's basically like fancy long underwear. But it's a single loop of coolant. So we've been looking at doing dual loop coolants so that you can change temperatures in two different specific areas and have more flexibility, also more redundancy on that. At the same time, we're also looking at heads-up displays inside the astronauts' helmets. So in your field of view, everybody's seen things like Google Glass and all that, but how do you display a heads-up display inside of the helmet that doesn't obstruct the astronauts' view, but you know, they can see it? In addition to that, a really fancy version of like an iWatch, but a very larger scale that's more like a tablet style that would be actually on their crew member's arm to allow them to actually be able to monitor all their own vitals and how the suit's performing and all that, and be able to give them the ability to look at it while they're out on an EVA, in addition to all the sensors going back to mission control and the main spacecraft where the crew's coming from.
What about gloves? Because I've heard astronauts say that, you know, if you're in one of these spacesuits for about 6 hours, you're working, and you quite often lose fingernails or thumbnails in the gloves. That must be something that you've looked at.
Yeah, so we're changing the pressure of the suits, first off. That's one of the things we're looking at is running the pressures of the suits slightly different. However, we are looking at glove technology that sells that reduces the amount of force you need to close the glove, and that'll help maintain or reduce the fatigue that you have. We're also looking at next-generation technology where you can do assistive gloves. So think about robotics being attached to your fingers. And so that whenever you close on something and you need to hold that position, that's where a lot of the stress occurs in the fingernails and fingertips is holding that position. But what happens if you had robotic appendages that were inside of your glove with you that would be able to basically lock that position and hold it until you told it to let go and move to a new position? So we have been looking at those kind of robotic and human devices working together hand in hand, literally, and being able to then hold a position so you don't get those high stress points for that.
Now, recently online there was a voting thing for some some spacesuits. Are those the things that you're working on?
Yeah, so we actually, the people that were building our next generation suit garment, the actual garment, not the backpack, but the garment, they did a partnership with a university in Philadelphia that's a design school. So the design school came up with several different designs of what the outside pattern would look like, both from an aesthetic look, but also a usability look. And they put out three different designs. All three designs actually included embedded lighting, LED lighting and reactive lighting, which then allows you can actually use that lighting in different ways. You can use it, obviously, to light conditions or where you're near. You could use the lighting to communicate which crew member is which, because they all look the same when they're all in the same suits. You could actually then even start using the lighting indicators of how data is going on, sensors. So then one crew member can identify that another crew member is having an issue. So there's a practical application, plus they look kind of cool, and we had over 200,000 people vote on the winning design that we're using for this iteration of the suit progress that we're making.
Yeah, I've seen them, and they look kind of futuristic and cool, like you want a spacesuit to look, yeah. like those silver ones from the Mercury days where they looked spacey. It's kind of exciting. Just moving on, you were also talking about, you've got so many things that you must work on. What's an average day like, before we go any further, for you? I mean, it must be amazing.
So our group, I have the privilege of working with over 25 different technology projects. They range from habitation, how we're building the next generation habitation, to the suits that we're talking about, to lander technologies, to things even as simple as what operating system and software are we running on these things, to autonomous software. To how do we load the rockets in a more autonomous way so we don't have a lot of people that are required at the launch day, and we can do those more autonomously and load the fuel in a safer and easier way. So my average day is working with all that, and I don't spend a lot of time in Washington, D.C., where my headquarters is, but I travel around the country to all of our locations that we have. So we have 600 people in my group who are working at 10 different centers, all the centers across the U.S., in addition to a number of international partnerships and a large number of public-private partnerships with the U.S. industry. So it's a busy day.
I should ask you a question about technology, but my next question is, how do I get your job? That sounds amazing.
So I don't know the advice. I mean, to me, I have to be a bit of a generalist in a lot of different topics areas. My background's in physics, and I am an engineer as well, electrical engineer. And have a lot of software background. So I didn't know what I wanted to do when I grew up, and I probably still don't know what I want to do, and it's actually advantageous to be just a big fan of technology and a constant student of technology. But the advice I give anybody is find something that's really fun and makes you want to go into work. I want to be busy because I'm having so much fun every day with all the projects we're having. So it's not hard for me to go to work. It's actually harder for me to take time off.
Yeah, that's a sign of a good job. If you have time, I'd love to ask you a little bit about the Morpheus lander. You were describing that this mm-hmm. morning, and I've been following that actually on Twitter for many years, and I was actually in America when there was a bit of a glitch, and it was a very sad day. I mean, even just following from afar, watching that mission on Twitter, seeing that they'd had a fault with one of the tests, that made me sad. But tell us a bit about, for people who don't know what Morpheus is, first of all.
Yeah, so Morpheus is what we're doing there. Is first, we were actually having a group of our engineers learn how to do really lean development, meaning not a bunch of paperwork, not a bunch of testing ahead of time, but how to build hardware quickly in an integrated way and test next-generation lander development itself and also the technologies that are part of landers, like autonomous landing systems and such. So we've been advancing Morpheus over the past several years at this point, and we did have a test failure two Augusts ago, and it was one of our first attempts at free flight, of flying it free. It went up, it lost its guidance signals, and it basically fell over into the ground. Now, that was a very sad day for the team, and obviously that emotional kind of response to that. But very quickly, we decided we're going to go fly it again and started literally the next day, piecing things back together to go fly the next version of Morpheus. And we went on to the B vehicle, the beta vehicle that you've been seeing in the news this past year, and was fully successful all the way through all of our night flights back earlier this year. And what was interesting is it taught us a lot about test failure. So that previous vehicle, we had flown 27 times, and we had the performance it had when it crashed. When we built the new vehicle was at the same level of performance, or actually slightly greater, only after 4 flights. And so there's, in technology world, there's these performance, what they call S-curves. And as you iterate from one design to the next, you can jump from one S-curve to another S-curve. And after the failure, we were able to make a sizable step in increase of capabilities in a very short order of time. And so we've been able to fly through that test sequence, and now we're evaluating the data that we got out of that. We may still fly Morpheus again, but now we're applying the knowledge we gained from Morpheus to helping accelerate several U.S. companies that we have landed missions to the moon on their agenda. And so we're partnering with those under an initiative called Lunar Catalyst. And you'll see us now working with those 3 commercial companies to help them get their landing capabilities to a point that they will commercially go land on the moon, which will then hopefully allow people like NASA, allow commercial industry, academics, to then broaden their use of the lunar environment to advance technologies and understand science. So it's been exciting, and Morpheus is one of our shining stars of projects, and that team will continue to be that as they can help the commercial industry as well.
So we've got the Disneyland of IAC coming up in the next few days here in Toronto. I'm just wondering, what are the kind of hot topics that you would be looking out for, or what do you have coming up on your agenda that you think is going to be really exciting in the next few months?
Yeah, so to me in the next few months, it's how do we... Obviously, we have one of the biggest things in human spaceflight right now. We have the first test flight of Orion coming up in December. That'll be a huge accomplishment for us. We have the commercial crew awards that we just did, and now we're going to be seeing commercial crew accelerating and getting, over the next months and years, very short order years, to a point of actually commercially flying our crew members to and from the space station. In addition to that, we're going to also be competing the next round for commercial cargo to the station now, as we've had SpaceX and Orbital as great providers for that service, and now we're then, as stations extended, we're going to look at the next generation of that. With that, we have a numerous number of payloads going to the space station. We, in my group specifically, we have an inflatable module in partnership with Bigelow Aerospace that will be flying next year to the space station and looking at, for the first time, how inflatables work in space. We did tons of testing years ago under our Transat program, and other internationals have been exploring it, but nobody's flown it in space as part of a human spaceflight vehicle system in the past. So we're really excited about that. We're also excited about some fire safety demos that we're going to be doing next year, which is we're going to be, for the first time, burning large objects in space, which in the past, a 4-inch by 4-inch cube is about the biggest thing we've ever caught on fire in our microgravity fire experiments. And
fire in space is really interesting because the flames are completely different shapes.
They're completely different shapes. Maybe Hollywood will get it different the next time we do this. And what we want to do is look at large-scale fire and how does that propagate. So in one of those cargo vehicles that is going to the space station, one of the orbital ones, Cygnus, after it undocks from the space station, we have an experiment inside that will light a half meter by 1 meter, a large piece of material on fire. Before it deorbits. And we'll get great video, but more importantly, we'll get great understanding of the science of large-scale fire. We don't even know if fire will propagate on a large scale because everything works different in microgravity. And yes, we'll still have convection and those kind of things. However, we don't know how it propagates. So that'll be on one of the orbital flights next year. And so we're really excited about that. And I mean, there's just literally hundreds of different of those kind of demonstrations that's what makes me excited every day, and I could talk about them for all day.
So. Excellent. Well, I won't hold you up all day, but thank you so much for your time. Fascinating. I will be watching all of those things, especially that fire one. That sounds really cool.
Yeah, it's called called Sapphire. So look for Sapphire. Sapphire 1, 2, and 3, and we'll go through the sequence on 3 different orbital flights. So it'll be exciting.
Very cool. Thank you very much.